A while back, we addressed the issue of being caught between our grandchildren, their parents, and our own parents. We are the club sandwich generation. So as we help out our adult children and our parents, how do we handle the challenges of caring for our aging parents while at the same time looking out for ourselves as we age? It's not a new problem, but due to economics, mobility, and longevity, it is getting harder to manage. I'm Emily Morgan.
And I'm Mike Morgan.
In today's episode of The Grand Life, we talk with an architect who has spent more than 40 years providing workable designs to meet the needs of his clients.
He has used that expertise to write a resource guide to help us make our homes and those of our elderly loved ones into safe places to live out the remainder of their lives and ours.
Paul Spite, welcome to The Grand Life.
Thank you, Emily. I appreciate it.
Your book, Renovations to Enable Aging in Place, is an interesting read given your background. Maybe you could explain to us what prompted you to write this book and who you consider your audience to be.
I originally started it because of a situation that arose with my own mother, who was determined also to stay at home. Mm-hmm. And she had slipped on ice and broken a kneecap. And by the time that had healed, she had, putting weight on the other hip, she had started degenerating in the opposite hip. Mm-hmm. And for about a year, she would not leave our home. And no matter what, I couldn't entice her out with any restaurants that she loved or anything like that. And I'm like, what is going on? And it finally occurred to me, the house is elevated about 4 steps, mm-hmm. Like many homes are in the United States. And it finally occurred to me that she was literally afraid of her steps.
Yeah, that makes sense.
At the point where I figured that out, then I went to a hardware store and bought all the components I needed. I installed rails. My mom was free again. She was no longer imprisoned in her home, and I felt like an idiot. Because I've never dealt with that kind of pain before.
Sure.
And the fear of pain is a whole nother subject once you've been hurt bad. And so I was talking about that with I write continuing education courses for architects and engineers, talking mm-hmm. about that with a provider. He asked me to write a course on it. Several of the students that I was giving that particular course to in webinars, afterwards, they asked me, why don't you have that available as a book? I have this situation with my parents. And so I wrote the book.
Oh, great.
And that was the impetus, you know, behind the creation of the book. Tried to expand it into a resource that would be useful for my peers. I'm getting up in that age bracket somewhat. And so I can use the term peers. But my audience is going to be basically anybody in an older home starting to face health issues, make it difficult to enter or use or leave their home. But they don't want to leave their home. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this for them and for their children and their caregivers who are increasingly concerned about them being there by themselves. Because in a lot of cases, those kids are pretty distant.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably get into that in a little bit. But
yeah.
The idea of having your parent alone hours away is a bit unnerving.
Yeah.
Even if they don't agree.
Right. In your book, you talk about demographic changes and you know, things have changed. And it seems like a lot of us do live kind of far away from each other. In fact, we just made a move to be near our grandchildren and, of course, have moved away. We're not close to where my mom lives. And my mother is 92 and lives very far away from the three of her children. Talk about a little bit about those demographic changes that have happened in the world.
Well, the fastest one, when you're talking about pure demographics, the fastest one is that you're getting a population shift because the average age of those populations of across the broad spectrum is changing. Mm-hmm. The reason is partly because numerous couples that are of childbearing age are foregoing having children. Mm-hmm. They're opting not to do that. And that's a lot of factors. There's careers that are a lot more difficult if you have parental responsibilities. There's better access to birth control. There's easy access to abortion. There's also, and I'm not going to get into this much, but there's a societal shift towards self-centeredness. Mm-hmm. And they simply don't want to give that much of themselves away. There's less confidence in a committed spouse who's going to help them with the child rearing if they have children. So, and some just simply decide they want to remain single. So the list just goes on and on. But the bottom line is there's fewer children being born. On the backside of that, you have we have an increased ability to prolong life and treat health issues, and it just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
There's preventative measures, there's screening for early detection, there's early treatment capabilities, and there's successful treatment of things that we used to consider death sentences.
Yeah.
And so the bottom line is that there's more aging adults, and so the result is fewer, I don't know what the term is, XZYN generations to take care of those aging parents that are in our midst. And
yeah.
So, but, you know, with the, and I know the question came up about this dispersion of families, and that's a whole nother demographic issue. But what happens, you know, what happens with that is it's an economic shift in our culture. And it's honestly based on the fact that corporations, regardless of what they say, don't really put much value on their employees.
Right.
And so as a consequence, if you want to advance your career, almost always that's a lateral move. It's not an upward move. It's a lateral move to another company. So what that means is that then you move to another area.
Yeah.
Or sometimes, and this isn't to put it all on the children. Sometimes, I mean, at my age, I'm an empty nester. I could effectively just up and move if an opportunity presented itself that was really intriguing to me. I can't imagine honestly doing that because I'm getting lazy as I get older. But
well, it is hard. I can guarantee you that we did it last year. We just up and moved, and it was very hard. But so, you know, we did that to be near our grandchildren. Now, see, this is the thing: we're caught between. That's why I call it the club sandwich generation. We're caught between meeting the needs of our elderly mother and also meeting the needs of our grandchildren who also have, you know, our children who also have needs with their grandchildren.
It was a clear choice to be made when we decided to do this because neither was going to move closer to the other. And the mother-in-law is...
we offered to have her move close to us and she with us. And
she's a, what, 10-hour, 14-hour drive?
10-hour now because we moved to the East Coast so we could take the train to be up to see her. But these were all factors in considering whether we were going to live close to her or live close to our grandchildren. And it's a very difficult choice. Now, I'm wondering if the changing now with working from home, that movement has kind of begun in earnest during and after COVID. If that, do you think that's going to affect people being able to stay close to their relatives, close to their parents?
I think you're going to see a lot more. I don't think it's going to become multi-generational like it is in the Philippines, for example, where they although I think you're going to see a little bit of that, but you're going to see a lot more, I think, where children, because now we realize the possibilities. I think you're going to see careers advancing where people are basically just going to go into business for themselves, doing the same thing they did for corporations, only as contractors, you know, as contract labor. And that, you know, my wife and I both work from home. We have seven grandsons by the same daughter.
That's a lot of grandsons.
That's a lot of grandsons, and we're a mile and a half away.
Yeah,
which is honestly a little closer sometimes than I would be comfortable with because it's so easy for her to just stop by and say, "Hey, I've got to run these here. You know, here's seven of the kids." You know, but
yeah, we had that before we moved with another set. Yeah.
So I think the technology is actually making things really interesting, and just even taking that further, we have the ability now to FaceTime.
Yes.
And actually, our grandchildren can see us. My daughter just visited for another purpose. She's got three granddaughters. And the baby was, I think she's a year and 4 months. And I might have been around her a week of her life.
Yeah.
But within just a few minutes, because of FaceTime, she was comfortable with me.
Yeah, she knows you. She recognizes you.
Yeah, it was she recognized me.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And I think that helps. FaceTime has helped a lot. I think the ability to work from home has helped a great deal. And you can go take care of your parents if they're willing to let you. And
yes.
I know we're going to touch on that.
Yeah,
if
we are
willing
touch
to let you.
Yes. It's interesting because, I mean, even with the ability, like I have the ability to grocery shop for my mom who lives you know, 10 hours away. And I use Instacart and I shop for her every week. It's amazing that that can happen. You know, things have changed. So
And we've done the same thing, Emily. My mother-in-law just passed literally a week ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
You know, they were in a home they shouldn't have been in on a mountainside of all things with bad knees and ankles. And, you know, it was awkward, but they wouldn't move. They absolutely would not move. And so, but my wife did shopping for them the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, Amazon packages came regularly to their driveway.
Yeah.
And they didn't like it.
What would they have preferred?
That they would have preferred to have us understand that they were perfectly capable of taking care of themselves.
Let's talk a little bit about this. Aging in place is not a new concept, but it seems that I know several people in my family anyway who really want that to be the case, but they're not willing to necessarily make the changes that need to happen in order for that to happen, for them to stay aging in place. So maybe you could talk a little bit about implementing changes in phases. You talk about this in your book, in phases, when we're working with our parents to help them stay independent, but to encourage them to make some changes. I mean, resistance seems to be a common reaction from elderly people.
Well, yeah, for me too. My poor children are like, well, you're going to be the crabbiest, you know. But we know what the problems are. This is not new. I think we've pretty much been aging ever since the beginning of creation.
Yeah.
And we know the problems we're going to face. And, you know, when you get to the point where you, and I'm not going to list them all. I think they're called life skills or something of that sort. But when you can't climb up and down stairs with confidence,
right?
You can't stand and sit easily because of knee issues and, you know, those kind of things, properly using all appliances. After a while, you got to kind of get the idea that you're developing some issues that probably need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, fair enough. Okay. However, we can't really expect our aging loved ones, especially parents, to be grateful when we suggest or implement changes, because nobody likes change.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna slip into my familiar role, increasingly familiar role, as an aging adult for just a minute.
Okay.
So nobody likes change. We got set routines, set ways we do things, habits we can't break if we tried, ways we've developed to do things based on a lot of years of learning to get it right.
Yeah.
And maybe you've tweaked those as your abilities begin to decline and change becomes, whether you're going to admit it to yourself or not, change becomes more of a problem.
Well, yeah, you have to adapt. But that's you adapting. That's not your children that you change their diapers.
Yeah.
telling you that you have to change.
Yeah.
And so if we haven't decided on ourselves, then other people's opinions is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned in the book, the best way to get people to accept help or even make the renovations themselves is to do that in phases. And that comes in this, that parallels the phases of coming to terms with the fact that somewhere along the line, we traded our agility for our wisdom.
Hmm.
Okay, now the first phase, and I called that fairly unaware, others see problems developing, but we refuse to.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see any reason to change our lifestyle. We won't discuss issues. Just went over this with my father-in-law. I mean, he has no business staying there alone,
yeah,
but he's going to.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. And because his daughters suggested it to him.
Mm.
And so, but we won't look out for information. We won't acknowledge need. And there's just really no point in discussing changes at that point.
Yeah.
But phase two is pondering. And usually we're becoming aware at that point, maybe some problems are surfacing that it might be possible to counter by actually making changes in our homes. And it's usually triggered by a bad event, like in the case of my mother.
Yeah.
Like a fall.
Yeah. Sure.
Especially one with injuries. And now all of a sudden you're open to, especially if it's a enduring problem, you're open to discussing options and solutions to things that we finally acknowledge might be issues.
Hmm.
Now, when you get to phase three, we're ready to make changes and modifications. if they're made gradually, because there's less resistance involved in that. But we don't want any more changes made than are absolutely required. The best way to do that is to establish ahead of time, is there a trigger event that will initiate specific changes? If there's a fall, can we go ahead at that point and do this? If there is an issue with remembering things, can we go ahead and implement these changes? And then everybody's on the same page. Everybody's agreed. Now, if there's memory issues, we might not remember what we agreed to.
Yeah.
But what we've basically done is we're trying to work as a team now.
Right.
And we're involving them in those decisions. Now, when you get to maintenance, that's phase four. You're just considering whatever changes are needed at that point just to stay home.
Yeah.
Because the end's coming.
Right.
And you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to sound cavalier about this. I'm already making changes in my own home.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to talk about that. The bulk of your book is very specific about things like installing grab bars in your bathrooms to cabinet heights and all of that stuff. And your architectural background is perfect for that. I mean, do you see this book being used more as a handbook for renovating your home? Because a lot of it is in there, a lot of information.
That was the original intent, was to make it a reference book for seniors and their children. And then as I was researching that, I started finding all these fascinating things about the societal background behind this influx, this rising number of seniors who are wanting to age in place. Let me give you a really frightening statistic. I read somewhere that 95% of seniors who were polled wanted to stay in place. In another location, I found that 70 million people will be over the age of 70 in the next 10 years, will reach over the age of 70 in the next 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means if you take those two numbers together, that 65 million existing homes in the United States that are no longer going to be suitable for someone to stay in alone.
That's just amazing.
That's just mind-numbing.
Yeah, it is, really.
Yeah, you know, it's a major societal problem that is going to have to be addressed. We just can't throw the physical assets of 65 million homes away. And so what I did is I intended to make that a reference book. It just got kind of added to along the way, but it was intended to be a handbook to make aging in place possible. I also made a video describing most of those renovations, those specific physical renovations inside the home, and I put that on YouTube. And it's accessible to anybody to review. And there's no cost.
Great.
If they're interested. And if you go on YouTube and search for, in quotes, renovations to enable aging in place, that will come up and they're perfectly welcome to review that.
Oh, thank you. We will put that in our show notes. Mike, did you have a question?
Well, you know, we're talking about making changes to residences, but in your line of work, I'm sure that you've done a lot of design with the Americans with Disabilities Act requirements in mind. How does what you're suggesting for a home differ for the kinds of things that might be required for a commercial or a public property?
Well, the main one is that when you're spending public monies on facilities, you're required to have those. Of course, you're not required to have them in a home. But when you look at those, a number of those illustrations in that book are actually from the Americans with Disabilities Act, the United States Accessibility Board, that are made available to the public, because it doesn't matter whether you're in a home or in a bank, it takes the same amount of space to spin a wheelchair around, for example. The same knee space, you know, going under counters. And so to that extent, the problem is that you don't have a public building, you have an income source that you can justify spending the money for the renovations. You know, obviously in private, that's coming out of your retirement or out of your pension or out of your children's funds. And I don't know about you, but I really don't like asking my children for help with anything, especially finances.
Sure. Yeah, that's going to be another issue, because people, you know, you're saying all these millions of people who want to stay in their homes, they might not be able to afford. I mean, from what we've done some podcasts about the savings problem, people not having enough money to age, and that's going to be a problem because that costs money to,
if you're afraid of running out of money, putting a grab bar in your bathroom is probably not a super high priority until you fall.
Yeah, Yeah.
Until you fall.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. So it's a dilemma. We're in our mid-60s. How soon should we be thinking about this in our own homes?
I think that's going to depend on, well, two things. One is kind of facetious. If you know exactly when that accident is going to happen to you that will impact you from this point on, then you can schedule those renovations accordingly. But they don't seem to occur on schedule.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend to people, and what we've done, is we've started beginning with simple changes now.
Mm-hmm.
But we're looking for things that are lower cost and maximum benefit. I mean, this is just a small thing. I've noticed that I have hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
If I stand up too fast in the morning, I get woozy for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I put a vertical grab bar, 12-inch high vertical grab bar, in my bathroom to stand up with. But I think the next change I'm going to make in my home is to put one of those close to my bed.
Oh, interesting.
So that I have a moment to stabilize
mm-hmm.
and get my balance and my blood flow before I take the next steps.
Yeah.
So it's small stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's things like night lighting to make sure you're not going to trip.
Yeah, we've got those now.
Yeah, same thing. Safer rugs.
Safer
rugs. You know, the little throw rugs that you put down. You know, you probably ought to have rubber backing or tape them down.
Yep.
Because, you know, it really just takes one good
trip.
Fall with either a hip or a head injury.
Yeah.
And you've got a whole new life ahead of you. So eliminating steps. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book, this isn't in my notes, but this is kind of interesting because I'm going to have to deal with it in my home. You know, a lot of these houses, you come in by necessity at ground level into the garage, and then the house is raised either two or three steps
mm-hmm.
to get from the garage into the home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not really usually possible to put a ramp in.
Not enough room inside the garage to hold the ramp and the cars.
And the cars.
Right.
Now you can go to, you can take a two car garage and make it a single car, and that might be needed if that ramp is needed. But the other option too is you just take those steps out and put a lift in, a platform lift.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Even a grab bar, if you're on a limited budget, can be difficult. And a lift certainly would be a much higher expenditure than that.
Yeah.
But it takes up the same amount basically that a landing does for stairs.
Yeah.
And I'm not even, I don't even have stock in a lift company.
But. Well, and let's not forget, and you mentioned this in the book, that it's not like assisted living or going into a assisted living or nursing home. That's not inexpensive either. So it's like there's a lot to consider when you're deciding if you're going to age in place or you're going to go somewhere else. But most of the people I've talked to who are elderly do not want to end up in assisted living. That's like the last resort for them.
Which then makes the things that you're suggesting really great value potentially.
Yeah.
They are great value. You can pay for a lot of renovations with a year's worth of, I don't know what the term is, being that monthly payment.
Right.
Yeah.
You can do a lot to your home.
Yeah.
Now, what needs to happen is the children. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm tired.
We've done a lot for our kids, right?
Yeah. And if I can interest my children into making those renovations, and they would.
Yeah.
Honestly, they would if I wasn't so proud as to refuse to ask them for help.
Yeah.
And there's going to come a time when I'm not going to have a choice.
There you go. It'll be the implementing stage where it's going to have to happen.
It'll be the implementing stage.
Yeah. And you know, I really appreciate what you're saying, because I think we need, as children of elderly parents, we need the encouragement that we can't make these changes quickly. We have to wait until they're ready, because the truth is, all you do is alienate. I mean, it's just like the conversations always end up with, I don't want you telling me what to do. You know, I'm older than you are. I'm your parent. You don't need to be telling me anything. And so it's really good to have that reminder and also recognize we're going to be in that same boat. So we have to treat our parents the way we would want to be treated when we get older.
I know this sounds funny, but my father-in-law will listen to me far more readily than he will his own children.
Yeah.
I get that.
I hear that. Paul Speight, thank you so much for being here on The Grand Life. We really appreciate all the information you have provided for us in your book, and we will definitely leave all that information on the show notes for our listeners.
Great conversation, Paul. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for hosting me.
What a great topic. It gives us lots to think about in terms of approaching our elderly parents about creating safe spaces for them.
Well, yeah, not only them, but us too, right?
Yeah.
We're already starting to think about a number of these things in our own home.
Yeah, it seems like we just get finished baby-proofing in our own houses for our grands, and then we have to start over getting ready to retire into our own homes or helping our parents with theirs.
And speaking of doing some remodeling, we wanted to let you know that our next episode will be a chat with you about how things are going to look going forward. We've just finished our fifth year of this podcast.
Wow.
I know. The result has been so much good information about intentional grandparenting.
You know, as we move forward, we have some new things in mind. And in the next episode, we'll chat with you about it.
As they say, that's next time on The Grand Life.
In the meantime, I'm Emily Morgan.
And I'm Mike Morgan.
And thanks for joining us in Living the Grand Life.